Very good, and welcome to the Fred Report Technical Market Call for April 24th, 2025. We're going to sort of be a little shorter on our monologue so that we can get to some questions, and we're going to start right in. So, we still believe that the stock market is in a bottoming pattern. We still have a signal for this week to be a strong up week. We also still believe that there's going to be a retest of the closing low, and that's what's important. To be a successful retest for me does not imply new lows in price, although it can do that. What it implies is a new closing low on the indexes. So be aware that we think that that could occur, and it could happen in early May. Couple of other things that are going to be interesting here for people. And the first one is one of our clients has found that VXX and UVXY are now issuing K1s. This apparently started in 2024. I don't use those instruments. I don't know what they are, and we don't give tax advice at the Fred Report anyway. So our advice is anything to do with the VIX and trading VIX options or whatever it is you do with them, just make sure that you know what the tax treatment of them is going to be. The other thing that will be interesting, especially for some older Merrill Lynch advisors on the call, is one of my friends who is a very sagacious analyst. He doesn't want to be acknowledged here, so I'm not going to acknowledge him. But he has computed the old Merrill Lynch net tabs, and we have a -6 on the net tab, which is a strong reading for an intermediate term buy signal. So we'll have to see how that goes, but the net tab, for those at Merrill Lynch who want to see it because it's not being published at Merrill anymore, it is -6. The other question I'm going to make sure that Jeff Garbaz covers, and I've got this, he will cover this in his monologue, is this rally is being attributed to short covering. I have no idea if that's true, but Jeff will. So he can talk about that when I'm through talking about bonds and gold and all that. So bonds, we still think the bond market is actually going to see lower rates before higher. We note I've gotten a number of texts from clients that have indicated that now all of a sudden there's a bit of chatter about higher, longer rates, something which we've been talking about for some time. We still do think lower first, however. We have a target on TLT of 95, possibly by the end of summer. Honestly, I see no reason to not stick with that, but I will acknowledge bonds have been a little bit weaker in some respects than we thought. One of the things that's interesting about Europe, and I'll see if I can get the chart, but I may not be able to, and it may not be easily interpreted, there are some indications from Fidelity's research department that Europe may be moving into a recession. If that's true, not sure how that's going to affect European stocks in the short run. But again, I want to remind everybody, one of the tricks to investing during a recession is to realize that the market bottoms while the recession is still going on, when it starts to sniff out signs that it's going to end. So if we do see that, we will be looking at Europe, especially if their economic news gets worse. Gold had a bad day yesterday. We've had some questions about GLD, so we're going to give some key numbers on GLD for you. And they are a close below 303 on GLD, and we got below there yesterday, but you'll notice we closed above it. A close below 303 would target 288 and then possibly as low as 260 and fairly quickly. So, again, we're watching gold. We still don't have accumulation. Obviously, we've been wrong about the performance of this market, but our concern is still in that market that we could see a decline that is sharper than anyone is expecting, and one of our indications of that would be a close below 303. I'm going to open the call to Jeff Garbaugh right now so we can get to some questions, because I'd rather answer people's questions than talk. So, Jeff, if you have anything for us, especially on the short covering.
Yeah, well, first of all, on short interest, we're going to get new data today after the close. That's the first point. And in terms of covering, we are seeing some covering so far this week. If you look at short squeezes, well, first of all, Monday was a bad day. All short squeezes, names where the shorts are heavily short and they're making money, and long squeezes, which are weak and no one's short. All three of those lost ground on Monday, about the same amount. Short squeezes are down 182. Shorts correct were down 171, and long squeezes were down even more, down 265. Then that abruptly changed on Tuesday. Everything was up, got back to being even for the week. And then yesterday, the weaker stocks way outperformed yesterday. So for the week, the type three is where they're weak technically and they're heavily shorted. They're up 3.52 for the week. The type fours, which are weak and no one short, they're up 2.42 for the week. Then if we go to the strong stuff technically, they're only up, short squeezes are up only 58 basis points. And stuff that's doing well, that no one's short, they're up 99 basis points. So that's a classic sign of either some covering starting to occur or people starting to nibble on stuff that's been really pounded into the ground. And if I look this morning at my short squeezes, there's 14 of them, and only six of them are up. And on the short side, I've got 12, and seven of them are down. So it's today's kind of a more normal, orderly day. But on overall short interest, there's a hell of a lot of covering that's got to be done at some point, because we hit new highs, all-time highs on NASDAQ, and New York hit like multi-decade highs, not all-time highs, but multi-decade highs in the latest data, and we're up a bunch this year so far. So people have been piling on to stuff, for what it's worth, Fred.
Thank you, Jeff. That's important, because there's been all sorts of articles out there, Cramer's out there saying it was all short covering, this, that, and the other. And from what you're saying, it doesn't look like it was all short covering, and we still have a lot more covering to go, regardless.
Yeah, and I think we're still in this period of, you know, like I heard someone, Mike Santoli, who I actually like. I think he's got a brain, unlike a lot of people on TV. And he's like, we're in a quasi bear market, and I agree with him. We are in a quasi bear market because we did hit bear market status on a couple of the indexes at the absolute lows. We're kind of hanging around there. Very few stocks are up for the year. Lots of stocks are down for the year. I was talking to one of our good friends from Atlanta, Fred, yesterday, and I'm like, it's not quite like it was in 2009 where I could buy Bank of America at $3, but there's a hell of a lot of stocks that are under $5 in price, $10 in price, $20 in price. I'll run an update this weekend, Fred. Maybe we can load it into the weekly report of year-to-date returns. And then I think something like 65% of stocks are under $20 now. It's really pretty crazy how bad it is. So here's a question for you. Last week and this week have been pretty good for the Russell. It's starting to show some outperformance to the S&P. Do you agree with that?
Yes, and Jeff, I still think VBR is trading best of all, which is small cap value. But yeah, you know, we've had the question, would you be selling small cap here? And my answer is absolutely not. We published a piece, I think, while I was in Texas last week, saying that we would actually be buying small cap in here. And I think that is correct. And, you know, at least from a technical perspective, there's a couple of numbers. Again, if you're watching for this, and, you know, God, Jeff, as I always tell people, if I could type in symbols, I'd be a better analyst and I'd be dangerous. Let me say that a close on IWM above 195 this week would set us up for 200 to 205 and possibly back to 225. So we're seeing some good action there. Okay.
Hey, Fred, just so you know, like over so one thing that Phil tracks is the daily resistance, pivot, and support levels.
Mm-hmm.
And we call it the value lines. So it's interesting, in the last 3 days, on Tuesday, resistance was 185.06. Yesterday, resistance went to 188.90. This is on IWM. And today, resistance is at 193.87. So we're going up a bunch each day in resistance.
Yeah.
As we kind of go higher. And we've had 2 days in a row where SPY, the Qs, IWM, and DIA, they all have ended up closing above their resistance levels for the day. Having said that, yesterday was a bit problematic, so I'd like you to weigh in on the following. It was a gap up. As an example, let's look at SPY. The high yesterday was 545.43. The low was 533.88. We closed at only 535.42. So we closed less than $2 off of the low. And from the prior day, the close was 527. And then we got to a high of 545. So we only closed like 13% of the way up the range. So I don't consider that to be like a good trading day. I don't consider yesterday to be a really good day, even though the indexes were up. You know, SPY was up 1.55, Qs were up 2.27, Russell's up 1.48, and the Dow was up 1.03. So do you agree with me that yesterday was not a good day, or do you think it was – I'm just being too critical of it.
It wasn't a great day, but it certainly wasn't a bad day. And for me, my signal is a weekly signal, so it really depends on how we close the week. If we close the week in the top 20% of the weekly range, we're in pretty good shape.
Okay.
And then close on the high of the week.
And then I noticed also I track 5-day, 10-day, 20 50 and 200-day moving averages. Between Tuesday's close and yesterday's close, that was a little better. We went from 17% of the moving averages on the top six equity indexes being higher to now 46% being higher. All the fives, most of the tens, and about half of the 20s were positive. And even we got some positivity out of the 5 and the 10-day on TLT. It looks like TLT doesn't want to go to 4.5, and maybe we're going to work our way back to 4. You kind of think
that's
the case?
Absolutely true, Jeff. I am still looking for, and again, for those of you who think I'm smoking crack, I haven't smoked any today yet. But I'm still thinking that 95 is possible this summer.
Okay.
And I know right now a lot of people – it's funny, Jeff. I'm having some interesting discussions with people about the bond market because, you know, when I was saying last year I think we could see the 10-year at 8 to 9%, everyone was telling me I was smoking crack. Now when I tell them I think we could see it at 3.7, 3.8, they're telling me I'm smoking crack and we're obviously going to be at – you know, 6 to 9%. And so we'll have to see how that goes. I think what that does tell us is there's a lot of confusion around bond prices and interest rates right now from the analytical community.
Okay, so now I'm going to go away from interest rates. I'm going to go back to gold. So I got to laugh at people because like, they're saying, like, yesterday was the worst day since, like, 2021, the biggest drop. But we've also had a hell of a run Since the April 7th low, we ran to a closing high up 15.30%. So yesterday's drop of a whopping 2.4% and the two-day drop, which is a drop of 3.78%, like, to me, it's much ado about nothing. Do you agree?
Well, I don't look at the percentages so much. My concern on GLD is that it could be a third angle of ascent, which would target anywhere from 275 to 250 on GLD. Now, we have to break that 303 number for that to come into play. And as we saw yesterday, we did get down and fill a gap in there and close just above it, and we're higher today. So to me, until we bust through that number, gold is still an uptrend. What it is saying to me is, and again, I've been wrong on this market the last year. Well, not the last year, but since March, that there's not the professional accumulation that I think would support this being up. And because of that, there's a little more risk. But there's all sorts of things we can do, like take some profits and do some things. You know, GDX, for example, is below the equivalent of the 303 number now. If GDX makes a new low versus yesterday, we could see that back at 42, and I would hate to give that much money back, for example, if I were in it.
Okay, but aren't we, I mean, we are really extended. I mean, I look at Bollinger Bands, and on a daily Bollinger Band, GLD now, it got outside of its band to the upside on this latest run from like the 7th of April, like as I mentioned. And granted, it broke through it, like, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 days from the 7th until the peak 2 days ago. So, I mean, not only did it stay above the Bollinger Bands, but it kept breaking above the higher end of that level. So it was just an exceptional move. And, you know, there are some strategists, Fred, out there that are calling for 3,500. I mean, we got to 3,400, and now we've pulled back a bit, but also 4,000 as well. So do you think it could, if things stayed bad with respect to all this tariff stuff and people are looking to park money in a safe haven, that gold could just keep running?
You know, anything is possible, but it's not really supported by accumulation. But, yeah, it could definitely run. Remember, we looked at the open interest on that versus T-bonds on myfutures.tradingcharts.com. It's a small market.
Yeah.
So almost anything can happen. But one of the thing that would worry me is if you start seeing closes below 303 on GLD, I would start to sell some. You don't have to sell it all. I mean, one of the great – one of my favorite things that I've said on the call before is it took me probably 35 years to realize that I didn't have to put a stop loss on the whole position.
Yep, okay.
Right. But I would definitely be doing something. Jeff, I want to make one more remark that I forgot to make in the stocks section during my monologue, and so I do want to be sure that I make this. And then Jeff can ask a couple more questions, and we'll go to the field, as it were. But key here is if we are going to have a successful retest, and we think we are, one of the elements of a successful retest is that not every stock goes down. So what that means is if you've got attractive prices on a stock in your models that you want to add to or get new money and new clients into, you have to buy it now, right? And a perfect example of that is if we were waiting for the retest of the lows on Palantir and we didn't buy it in the 75 to 80 area, you're sitting at 105 at new highs for March and April on something that looks really good with the market still looking like it's going to make a retest, okay?
you know, something like IBM today was great. It's come down. It's really, you know, it's hit its long-term uptrend. I'd buy that now if you wanted. It's a favorite in the sector review. I wouldn't wait for a retest. So
okay.
That's the sort of thing. We're at the stage now, I think, Jeff, where we have to be looking at names that we like and realizing that some of those high relative strength names may just not come back down. So I've made that remark back to Jeff. Sorry, but I want to be sure I made that and was very clear on that.
Okay. Okay, I'm good.
Good. Let's see if there's some questions from people in the field. Guys, do you have any questions? And ladies also, sorry.
Fred, it's John from Minneapolis.
John from Minneapolis, it's good to hear your voice.
How you doing?
Functioning at a high level.
Good, good. Yeah, I got out of a lot of the Mag 7 stuff in the fall, and it seems like it's been repriced a little bit and kind of consistent with your last comment. Are there some in the Mag 7 that you think would be particularly good to pick up now?
Yeah, that's a really nice way of putting they've absolutely cratered as they've been repriced. I'm going to have to remember that. One of the ones that we used to use at Robinson Humphrey all the time is the stock is misbehaving. Not just going straight down, but misbehaving. So, the short answer is something like Tesla, which reported bad earnings and is going up, something like Microsoft, and again, I'm going to just give you some of the ones that I think are Mag 7. If you want to give me the actual Mag 7 symbols, I'm afraid this is embarrassing. I don't even know what they are. But something like Microsoft looks like it's bottoming, and it's way down from 450. I think Apple is a decent buy in here. I think NVIDIA is a decent buy in here. I'll tell you this, Apple above 202, 203 is strong, and much above 208, the stock could be at 225. So, yeah, there's some really appealing names in here if you want them.
Okay, how about Meta as part of that? And Google are the two other ones.
Okay. Meta, if it, and again, please don't hate me, because the high today is 531, and if the stock can close for me above, say, 531.50, you've got 558 and then 600 on it, on Meta, right? So
okay.
You're right,
yeah.
Where it's sitting there. And I'll tell you this, John, if you see this back at 505 and you want it, say, 505 to 507, you got to buy it, even if you're barfing in your shoes. And
okay.
Which is the best time to buy, by the way. You know, excuse me while I pull out my barf bag, but I got to get these orders in first, sort of thing. I even have in my office, I used to, this is terrible at Merrill, they asked me to get rid of this. I had a collection of barf bags from different airlines. You know, every time I fly in a different airline, I'd get one of their barf bags, and then I'd have it in my office sort of as part of an exhibit on the wall. And they asked me to get rid of that, so I did. Google is trading well enough, but I'd like to see it above 161 before I was sure. But, yeah, it's buyable here if you want to try it. And if it gets to and holds 153, that would be another place to buy it. I don't think
okay.
It's going much below 153.
Okay, and last two tickers would be Halo, H-A-L-O, and Palo Alto.
Okay. Halo is holding support. It doesn't look as good as some of those other ones, but it's holding support. I could certainly do it. And PLTR is Palo Alto Networks, right? No. What is Palo Alto? PANW, right?
Right.
That also looks quite appealing. I could certainly do that one. You've got some resistance in the 180 area.
Okay.
But if
okay.
you buy it and it goes to 180 and starts to fall off and you sell it, I've done a lot worse things to people than that, I'll tell you.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking of putting it in a basket with some of those Mag 7 ones I like.
Yeah.
And just having my own mini seven or whatever. So
no, that makes sense.
Okay, perfect. Well, thanks, Fred. That's helpful.
You have a good
day. Hey, Fred, Jeff, real quickly on Google.
Sure. Yeah.
So Google is going to report today after the close, just so you know, number one.
Oh, thank you, Jeff.
Number two, one of my tech clients who's a really, really smart guy, we had a discussion a couple days ago about the fact that ad sales are reporting to be down 20% in March. So in other words, companies have pulled the plug on ad spending because they know that they're not going to get the payback they normally do because consumer confidence is so weak. That's point number one. Point number two is if you go to Google and you and I'm talking about the browser, and you go to the browser and you put in, like, just type in as an example, and anyone can do this right now, they'll see this. What are tariffs? If you put that in and you ask Google it, it'll come back, and the very first thing up at the top, it's going to say AI overview, okay? That's Google's AI product built into Google search, and it's the very first thing that you see, and you don't see any paid searches until you step down one level. So he was saying, which I find to be pretty interesting, that ad sales are going to be much lower because they're trying to promote their own AI thing. And so to me, like, Fred, 150 is kind of a line in the sand. If they come in with some of this stuff coming out, it could easily break it. And then it looks like, you know, you're talking 130 on the downside. Would you agree that that potentially is where it could go?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyone who wants further discussion on this, feel free to get in touch with me. But I thought it would be important. Okay?
Thank you. Yeah, 144 is another key number. But yeah, I don't know whether I'd buy this ahead of earnings, but I don't normally buy things ahead of earnings anyway. So, but yeah, Jeff's points are, there's all sorts of antitrust stuff going on with them. I mean, it may be a good time to buy it because of all the hoorah, but be a little careful, maybe not buy as much. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, it's Paul.
Paul, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Hey, this is not a position in my models, but we have some brokerage clients that have, you know, for income. It's an interesting chart at this point, but BMY, can you comment on that if you would, please?
That's Victor Mary, yes.
Boy Mary Yellow.
Bristol Myers, okay.
Bristol Myers, yep.
Yeah. That is holding on here, but I would really like to see it above 50 before I were to get super excited about it holding.
The daily looks like it's getting ready to turn up, but yeah.
Yeah, but above 50, I'd feel a lot more secure about it.
Okay, thanks so much.
Got it.
Fred, it's Dean.
Hey,
a question on a spec. Good morning. A question on a speculative stock. It's
no,
Apple,
not you.
Apple Bravo Larry, a little company that buys insurance policies that people have lapsed for about 20 cents on the dollar.
Right.
They do a valuation and then
believe it
a
or not, Dean, I can get you some more information on that. We had Jerry Dickman on our call last year.
Okay.
Jerry is an expert in life settlement and is working in that area. Okay.
I must have missed that one. Excuse me.
Yeah. So this company, the stock looks decent. It's coming out of a base. This may not be the very best company in this area, and if you want to find out more about it, I can get a hold of Jerry, which I need to do in the next few days. He's a good friend.
I'd appreciate it if he'd email me, or you
sure.
Get my contact information.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Got it.
Other
questions?
Hey, Fred. John Niebling.
John.
I've got three stocks for you. Amazon.
That is still, and notice I'm saying this before I get the symbol typed in, a favorite in the sector review. Much above 188, you've got 200. Much above 200, you've got 225. I still like the name.
All right. RSP, the equal weight S&P.
You know, that is so interesting here. I need that above 168 and then 170, and then it's free to go to 180.
All right,
it looks
good.
Like it's going to do it to me.
All right. Last one, C Limited, S-E.
S-E, C Limited. Not quite as good, but if you were to see that pull back to 118 and you want it, I would take it. And I would probably wait to see if I get that. There's a gap in there, and it's trading like it's going to try and fill that gap. It's not horrible, but it doesn't look like it's going to be explosively up.
All right. Thanks a lot, Fred.
Got it.
Hey, Fred, it's Nancy. How are you?
I'm fine, Nancy.
Two stocks, ABBV.
That is still a favorite in the sector review. It's a really decent drug stock, and I think it can make it. Your risk area is right here at 180, but I think it's going to go through it, and then you've got to move to 192.
Okay, and DOCS?
DOCX or S? S, Doximity.
S is in Sam, yeah.
S is in Sam, yeah. Above 58, you've got a fair amount of resistance at 60. And Nancy, if I were to see this at 52 and change, I would probably get it then. There's a gap there, and it looks like this one could try and fill it.
Great. Thanks so much.
Got it.
Hey, Fred, good morning. It's Chris from Cincinnati.
Chris from Cincinnati. How are you?
Wonderful. So I'm looking at SPY, and you were talking about up front that we might see a retest of the lows into early May at some point. My question is what do you think the upside is between now and then before a retest? What would be, if we hedged ourselves, what would be missed to the upside potentially?
I would probably want to hedge at 550 to 555.
Okay.
But I'm not going to hedge this week, no matter what.
Not this week? Okay.
Not this week.
What are you looking for next week, then?
I don't know. I have to see how this week ends, but I have a very specific signal saying that this week we could close on the highs, and I've been sort of guessing that we're going to close at 549.
Okay. And then as far as Morgan Stanley stock, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I still like the looks of that stock. I might become nervous about it when it gets to 120 for a pullback, but that's through the March lows and trading pretty well. This has got relative strength. And by the way, guys, for everybody, the way I'm judging relative strength short term is, are we above the March low on a name? The Spider has got a March low at around, let's say, 550 for grits and shins, okay? And so I'm using that resistance area because that's where we broke down out of on news and extreme sentiment change. So I would say Morgan Stanley is ahead of that, and it's a stock that I would buy. By the way, Chris, I'm going to just mention something since I know you were interested in this, but this is sort of a, I won't say warning, but an observation since we all learn stuff, and that is when you've got, remember I kept saying on the put-call ratio, it's only one indicator, so I'm not going to worry about it that much, but as it turns out, that indicator was absolutely correct. And everything else was wrong. So the question is, why was that? And again, you still can't hang your hat on one indicator. But one of my observations for myself is if we've got a news item that everyone is looking for, and sentiment is really bullish, the danger of a surprise is very definitely there. And that's basically, looking back on what happened, was I was not the only fellow thinking that the tariff announcements were going to be the low, right?
And you mean that the market would go lower, or the market would go higher?
The market would go higher after the tariff announcements, that we bought them in advance of that and go up. And we all remember, certainly, that that's what people were thinking. And we all remember that the put-call ratio showed that by being negative as we went into that announcement. What happens there, and we've seen this happen in other instances in the market, is all of a sudden everyone changed their minds at the same time, right? And the put-call ratio suddenly shot up dramatically, and we got that spike, right? When it's a news item with a specific date and time, sentiment indicators may very well be much more important than other indicators, especially if there's a surprise.
Thank you.
That's an observation. So if you keep following those numbers, and anyone, by the way, on the call, if I start trying to make that mistake again, is free to call me and remind me of this, because we all make mistakes. Chris, you have any other questions?
No, that's it. Thank you.
Cool. Have a good day.
Hey, Fred. Yeah. David in Little Rock.
Hey, David.
Remind me of your year-end forecast, and you know, at the start of the year, and are you more convicted that that'll be pretty close, or have you lost some of the conviction,
you know,
given all that's going on?
David, I don't make a year-end forecast in that we're going to close at a certain number at the end of the year. Although I did that once and I was off by 23 cents, and I will tell I'll be the first person to tell you that that was pure unadulterated luck. Okay. I have felt and still feel that the spider can trade at, say, 645, 650, which would be 6,500 on the S&P. I think that's still possible. A lot of it is going to depend on how we do into the June-July period, because we, you know, I was previously thinking we were going to hit it then, and then have a bad second half. Now, it seems, again, I'm not trying to be funny when I say this, but it seems to me that the first half has been pretty difficult so far. Okay.
Yeah.
So one of the things I may very well have been incorrect about is the second half being difficult and the first half being, you know, fun and games. But we'll know that a lot more in the summer when we get to see things like the advanced decline line and, you know, the McClellan summation index and all that, and my breadth oscillators.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. But as of now, I still think this is a correction in a bull market and that we're going to be higher by summer.
Perfect. Yep. And that I misspoke. You're right. Not year-end forecast, but that target number that we could reach. So perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, David, you have no idea. My phone literally blew up after we closed 30 cents off my numbers, 23 cents off it. And all I could say was, you know, I'm never, ever going to do that again. You know, John Bollinger, the inventor of Bollinger Bands, has a somewhat tongue-in-cheek saying, which is, everybody gets to buy the absolute low and sell at the absolute high one time. So take that for what it's worth.
Yep.
Thank you, David. Other questions?
Hey, Fred, on the breadth indicators you were talking about, apparently yesterday we came really close to a Zweig thrust.
Yeah, a Zweig breadth thrust, which is a very bullish indication a lot of the time. We have to do a certain thing within 10 days, and I think we've got two or three more days to do it in.
Right.
But the real point of that, Scott, is, you know, breadth is not terrible right now.
Right.
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 And that, you know, you look at the performance of RSP, you look at the performance of small cap, there are still signs that the market's broadening out. And like I told one of my clients, you know, I have a client who I absolutely love. He's a dear, dear man. His wife is wonderful. They're good friends. But they're out west, and their portfolio was 95% tech names, right?
Right, right.
You know, this felt a lot worse to him, down 55%.
Sure.
Than
no
it
question.
Did to most of us, down 20%.
Sure.
Right.
Okay, and that's helpful. Sorry, go ahead.
Oops. Go. And what I was going to say is, you know, some of this weakness in the market has masked rotating out of some of these stocks, something which we had said was going to happen. If the largest cap stocks in the Dow are being rotated out of, the Dow's not going to do so well.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And maybe just a comment on sentiment from me, anyways, I just got back from Latin America and spoke with a lot and met lots of Asians, Brazil, your other parts of Europe, and the sentiment was utter fear. I'm not saying bearishness, but beyond bearishness, fear of Trump and our country. And I find that the press is just, you know, fanning the coals on this. And I know they are over there because, you know, he's not very popular internationally, that's for sure. So do you have any comments on that relative
all
to...
All I can tell you is the intermediate sentiment indicator that I use is my Investors Intelligence percent bears number.
Right.
Okay. And that indicator, and we published it a couple of times, but you've been away, that indicator is at 1922 lows, very close. It may get there this week. I'll get the sentiment numbers after the call. And honestly, we're at levels that have marked huge intermediate bottoms. Now,
right,
again,
right.
There have been times when those numbers have gone higher. But, and I'm going to just bring up the indicator in the latest chart that I have in the latest monthly so I can be a little more specific here, but I would judge that indicator at over 25. If you consider in 2022, 2023, we're way above that. We're way above where we were in 2023 at that low. 2022 was a huge number, and we're not near there yet. That number was above 40 that on that indicator, but at the bottom in 2020, we were around 32, and we're around 31 now, right? So we're at pandemic levels of bearishness.
And Hartnett's, you know, work on the fund manager survey was equally as dire, even to the point where at least I read that he was kind of mocking his own indicator. But I just think that's all interesting.
The sentiment backdrop here is there are very many bears as opposed to bulls. I believe, and again, I can tell everybody this, I will utilize my computerized mechanism, my other computer, to bring this up. But I believe we've had more bears than bulls on my sentiment survey, which, and again, Investors Intelligence goes percent bulls, percent bears, and obviously the rest is expecting a correction. The correction number has been very high, and we've been negative of the last 10 weeks. We've been negative 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and a zero in there, which I would count as 6. Negative versus negative, more bears than bulls. And that's extremely unusual. So, yeah, sentiment is very favorable here.
That certainly lines up with your work. Thanks very much, Fred.
Sure. Other questions? Other questions?
Very good.
Hey, Fred, it's Dustin.
Dustin.
How you doing?
Functioning well. How's Santa Barbara treating you?
Phenomenal.
Good. It's hard not to have a phenomenal time in Santa Barbara. That's one thing I can successfully state.
It's true. What do you think of Raytheon RTX?
RTX. Let me get that up and look at it. You know, it's not trading particularly well, but it is holding the 110 to 112 area support.
Okay.
On the weekly chart. And you do have a weekly stochastic that is down but not completely recycled. Justin, I will tell you one thing about this, and this is something that you've probably got friends you can check on this with, or maybe even clients. They bought United Technologies. That's where the X in Raytheon Technologies comes from UTX.
Yeah.
I have been told by buddies of mine who are very strong aerospace engineers that the culture clash there on that merger has been much more than the client, than the companies themselves expected. And that's one reason why I haven't recommended the stock a whole lot.
Okay.
But check that, because that's also now a couple of years ago, Justin, right? That those things have a way of working themselves out, and they don't generally last for years and years and years. So that's something I would check.
Okay. Okay. And then how about this one? What do you like better, Visa or Capital One? And that's Charlie Oscar Foxtrot.
Charlie Oscar Foxtrot. Right now, I would have to say Capital One and MasterCard is a little better than both of them.
Okay.
But don't forget, Capital One and Discover's merger has been approved.
Yeah.
There could be some interesting trading in there. The real point, though, is if you look at the intermediate charts, the credit card issuers are trading very, very well. Visa's trading well. It's held support and gone to where you would have thought it would have gone to in a correction. MasterCard, I like it a little better because it has a cutout low, which is a false breakdown. And even American Express, I have that on both MasterCard and American Express on my list. American Express is holding, of all of those, since American Express is so wrapped up with travel, that one may be the weak link here.
Okay. Okay. It's had a good run, though, American Express.
Oh, it sure has. Right? It's been a great stock.
And then was there anything in the chart book that jumped out at you and said, this looks like the most fantastic buy that you see right now?
Well, I will tell you, and again, I sound like a broken record. I'll tell you two things about the chart book. The first one is, by far, Palantir and Walmart are huge. Okay? Palantir could be at new highs on the retest, the way it's trading. Walmart is way above the March, And when you think that, you know, Walmart, if everything from China doubles in price, that has to hurt Walmart.
Yeah.
Right? And the stock is acting like that's not going to happen. But the other thing about the chart book that is really, really clear is just if you page through that, I was going to say thumb through that. It's hard to thumb with a computer. Reminds me of Ralph Acampora always says, hold the wire if he wants you to hold on his cell phone. I'm like, Ralph, there's no wires anymore. But look at that chart book. There are so many weekly recycles in that.
Yeah, exactly.
That, again, if you forget that the world is going to end in 90 days and that the world economy is going to go to zero because of the tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a buyer in here.
Yeah.
And what's even more interesting is
at a lot of these major bottoms, there's always something that's going to destroy you utterly to keep you out of the market. Some sort of news item, right?
Yeah.
This time it's the tariffs, but I can think of all sorts, you know, of other things. In 2009, obviously, we all know that everybody's house was going to be repossessed.
That's right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, especially you poor bastards in California, right? Yeah, you were gone. I mean, you might as well, you know, exactly, right? And it wasn't good for a lot of people, I admit that, but the point is, there's always a news item that's going to keep you out. And,
exactly.
You know, I always kid myself, but one of the reasons I keep these technical indicators is so I can actually follow them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, at the beginning of the call, you were talking about IWM small caps. And
yeah.
It sounds like you think small caps are going to outperform SPY going forward.
I'm not
going to
say
that,
Justin, okay. But I think that small caps could start to perform in line with SPY here. And that's because some of my monthly indicators that I keep on small cap are actually finally down from when they really peaked. And that was a long time ago, but resolving that sort of thing can take a huge amount of time. And what I'm actually going to try and do here is tell you when they actually peaked for me relative to the S&P and the Qs. I'm going to have to do something very quick here. But it was like 2.5 years ago, right? A long time. And not everything stays in the trash for a long time.
Yeah. So what you're saying is the small caps peaked at the end of 21.
Yeah. And what's interesting there is, I think it's safe to have an allocation to small caps now.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas it was a real problem before. I'm just drawing a chart. Let me see something. I'm doing something in Excel. You're talking about, yeah, exactly. And now we're not in that sort of position anymore. So I think you've got a shot. In other words, if I had stuck with small cap all this time, there's no way I'd be selling it. I'd probably be adding to it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
Yep. And then the triple Qs versus the SPY?
I have less accumulation on the Qs than I have on SPY, so I think SPY would be the way to go. But the Qs are trading pretty well right now. And honestly, tech is probably going to be one of the bigger sectors in the weightings on the S&P for a long time. So that argues at least in favor of holding the Qs.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, thanks for your time, Fred. I appreciate it.
Sure, Justin. We appreciate you.
Thanks.
Hey, Fred. Hey, John Ebling again.
John, let me borrow John and then the other guy that was coming in. John?
All right. VXUS, Victor X-Ray, Uniform Sam.
A Uniform Sam. It's still trading well, and I'm going to stick with my forecast that by the end of the year, we could see outperformance by the U.S. And right now, it is right smack. My resistance number is 63. It's gotten to 63.26, and it's at 62.98, which is kind of funny, actually, okay? But I would still be a holder of that, but I think the U.S. may end up outperforming.
Got it.
One of
Thanks
the reasons
again.
For that, though, John, is the Fidelity work I've seen that suggests Europe could go into a recession.
All right. Thanks, Fred.
Sure. And don't forget Japan. It should go sideways and not do much for a couple of years. But it's still a great-looking long-term play, as is India.
All right. So how would you play that? EWJ?
Right now, EWJ, if I had DXJ, I would not sell it, but I'd be adding DWJ. The reason for EWJ, the reason for that is for the yen has been totally pounded, and DXJ is a hedged instrument. The yen looks like it's going to go into a trading range. And so EWJ could certainly do better given that. And if you really want to be a little bit aggressive, SCJ, SAM, Communism, Japan. That actually has made a new high on the weekly chart for the last couple of years this week. It's small cap Japan, right? And I believe it's going to make, in fact, I think it's already made versus 2014, new closing highs, okay? But it does have less volume, and it is a little bit scarier to play. In fact, Jack will make a note that I'm going to look at SCJ versus DXJ and EWJ in the weekly because I didn't even realize it was doing this well. I own it, and I never look at it.
Hey, right, hey, Fred, real quickly.
Yes.
So on your Europe thing, a couple points. Also from a macro guy this week, reporting that shipping from China to the U.S. is now down 30%. So because of the tariff stuff, people have put transactions on hold. But if you look at the durable goods number that just came out this morning, it was 9.2. It was off the charts versus, you know, like a 2 number that was kind of expected. There's been a lot of pushing stuff into inventories ahead of this stuff. And so the recession thing, you know, we may be good in terms of inventory, but once we get through this stuff, there's going to be an incredible, and no one's talked about this, there's going to be incredible demand to restock inventories, and that's going to push economic activity in a really, really, really big way. Another point, Fred, just to kind of clarify on something, you were talking about, you know, on Walmart, the prices are going to double and stuff. So one of the guys that Jack and I are working with had a really smart line about this stuff. So if you're Nike and you're paying for a pair of shoes that come from China, you're paying like $10 for the shoe. And then you're marking it up $90 and selling it for $100, okay?
Right.
When the shoe's coming in, you're paying a tariff on $10. So if it's a 25% tariff, your cost is $2.50. If it's a 50% tariff, your cost is $5. Got it?
Yeah.
So Nike can absorb that cost much better than people think. And it also is going to prevent this idea that tariffs can replace income tax. That's horse shit. It's not going to happen. And so no one's really done good study work on it. I just want to point that out. It's tariffs are not based on wholesale and retail prices.
Yeah.
So people understand that. Okay.
Right. That's a good point. Jeff, I will say this about Nike. Take a look at the monthly chart. And if you look at that as a left shoulder that started in 2019 and went to, say, 2020, and then the left shoulder, which started around 2022 and is now broken, there could be problems with Nike. I don't know what they would be, but we don't want them to sneak up on us. Sorry.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you 1,000% on that comment, Fred.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Yeah.
This could be a great short. I don't know what your work says on it, but the chart pattern on the long-term chart is something that, you know, it's definitely, this pattern has risk.
Okay. Okay, great. Okay.
Let's see, other questions, because we're getting on in time. I don't mind. I got time today, but other questions.
Fred, hey, Bob Robbins here.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Yeah, okay. Hope you're doing well. Hey, a couple of quick comments on Palantir. It's my favorite stock. They have artificial intelligence software to optimize the supply chain for changing tariffs. So they are a tariff play. I think that's pretty phenomenal. And the other thing is, it was reported by Fox Business in the last week that the U.S. is planning to build an Iron Dome. Israel, as you know, has an Iron Dome. And the three front runners were reported to be SpaceX, Palantir, and Anduril. So this is going to help put Palantir on the map. I totally agree with your comment that Palantir is an exceptionally strong stock. If you look at the chart, you wouldn't think there's been much of a bear market here or a near bear market. So Palantir is still my favorite play, and they report earnings on May 5th, and I think the stock is positioned to challenge its highs.
You know, Bob, you hate to, you know, irrational exuberance or even rational exuberance, but, you know, certainly one way to look at this technically is that it's made an inverse head and shoulders or a head and shoulders bottom. The neckline was 100, and the measuring objective is 135, if you take the width of the two prongs and stand them on their end. And again, Bob, the real key point that I'm have been trying to make, and I agree with everything you said, is, you know, if you've got good stocks in this environment, you can't not buy them if they're at prices you like. You just can't.
I'll add one thing about the market, and that is that this is a tariff, Trump tariff-driven market. And so I think the usual rules that govern a different kind of bear market, such as a Fed-related bear market or something else, cyclical or structural. But this is a Trump-driven decline, and as such, I don't think it has to, it is as likely to have a double bottom. It's going to depend on what Trump does.
Yeah, Bob, it's real interesting. Again, you can go back, you know, classic technical signs that we've been noting for a couple of years of an impending decline were the advanced decline line peaking and the transports failing horribly. So it's a mixture of the two. But again, Bob, the real key is, unless you're just playing stock index futures, you don't want to wait for a retest if you've got stocks that are prices you like, because not everything goes down on the retest.
Yeah.
I've gotten back when I was working with you in the early 90s, when I was still basically learning how to do this, I got completely upskewed with that in the first Saddam Hussein Iraq war. I kept waiting for stuff to go down, and it didn't. The only thing I did right there for me personally was, when it all started going up, I said, well, Bob was right on that. Perhaps I'll buy stuff. But that's the real key for everybody on the call, is if you've got stuff you like the looks of, and a perfect example of that is IBM scooting right down to the long-term uptrend on the monthly here, and it's a great-looking AI play, you've got to try it here. If you want it,
yeah.
Right? And it's down.
Also,
I mean, what do you want?
If there, yeah, and if there is some sort of double bottom, then the best stocks have a habit of posting a higher low on the double bottom, because they're just better, stronger stocks.
Yeah, lower the price. And the hardest thing, but an old mentor of mine when I was trading in California said, when everything goes on stale, you buy the best stuff you can, even if it's a little more expensive. So, anyway, Bob, let's see if there's some more questions. Thank you for coming in. Other questions from folks? Very well. We'll say going once, going twice. Very well. This will end the Fred Report technical market call. Everybody.
Hey, Fred, Jeff, really quickly.
Yes,
sorry.
Jeff, please.
Someone just hit me with a question on text. So hang on a second here. Okay. Okay, it's a... can you ask Fred to foot what the probabilities are for a closing low given short interest at all-time highs on NASDAQ NYSE close to it? And B, think IWM, if it closes greater than 195, has a chance to get to 225? That's the first question. So if you can answer that one first.
That one is yes.
Okay.
It should get to 225. And the
So the time frame, if we're going to go to a new closing low, he asked, this is kind of a follow-up, needs to happen before we think that the levels on the upside can get to. What would be the time frame for you in a best-case scenario and in a worst-case scenario to get to the closing low buy?
I would say May 2nd. Let me say, see if that's a – before I give you a weekend day, Jeff, perhaps.
That's next
May
Friday.
May 2nd would be Friday. That would be perfect.
Okay.
And the other thing would be, you know, if we haven't done it by the first week in May, what generally happens is from the first low, and we'll just take a quick look at this, it's generally 5-6 weeks.
Okay.
Okay. And come on, computerized mechanism. I believe, let's take a quick look, the first closing low was the week of 4-8. So 5 weeks would be right in that May 2 time period to, say, May 14th. If we haven't done it by then, I would have to say we're not going to do it. And, of course, we may know in a lot of detail if a couple of trade deals get made and the market just goes up that it's not going to happen. Okay?
Okay,
but
great.
I would tell that client, please, if he's got stuff that he likes the looks of at good prices, he should be buying it now.
Okay, great. Awesome. Thanks, sure. Fred.
Got it. Any other questions?
One last one, Fred.
Yes, sir, Alan.
C-A-L-M, Laser, Charlie, Alpha, Lima, Mike.
Okay. I have to calm down on this one here, Fred. Like I've said, Alan, if I could type correctly, and I have to tell you, you were so mellow saying that symbol. I mean, it's like calm. It has got a lot of support in here. I don't have any reason not to buy it. And if it were to get above 96 and then above 100, I'd have a lot of reasons to buy it. Notice on the daily chart, we had that big down day in February, and 100 was about halfway up that day, plus some resistance from early 2025. If it can get above
Bingo.
There, you've got a great name.
Got it. Thank you, sir.
And it should get up there. So, I mean, if you buy it and it looks like it's going to meander around up there and you sell it, again, I've done a lot worse. A lot worse.
Okay, Fred. Well, thank you so much.
Good enough. Again, any other questions? Very well. We'll say going once.
Hey, Fred, I am going to ask you one more last one.
Sure.
It's part of continuation of that other question. If we don't make a new closing low on SPY, does that make the move up in SPY not as strong or more likely for a worse reversal at some point?
It may not make it more strong, but it doesn't imply more reversal.
Okay.
And again, let me just point out, because I had a good talk with one of our clients who's a dear friend here in Atlanta yesterday. We should all remember the technician's disease, right? What that is I have to get everything I want, and what I want is a new closing low. Okay? Nothing has to happen, right?
we may not get it. I still think there's a good shot at us getting it. But if you're buying strong stocks, they're not going to go down there with it. And that's the key.
Hey, Fred, let me ask you one other thing really quickly, which kind of just came to mind by what you just said. So we've heard more talk in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks about the death cross, the 5,200-day death cross, which most of the time it doesn't turn out to be anything. Does that give you more confidence that potentially it's okay being done here because we've hit that thing as well that everyone always likes to talk about? That and the Hindenburg omen, quote unquote, those two things, you know?
Yeah. Bob Farrell at Merrill Lynch did some wonderful work showing that probably 80% of the time with stop losses, you want to buy after a death cross. That obviously, if something's really going to go wrong with the market, that's an excellent sell indication. And I will point out one thing which we talked about before on the call. Most people don't know why the 250-day moving averages exist. But I will tell you why. The reason is back when Joe Granville was first popularizing technical analysis at E.F. Hutton, they didn't have computers to draw their charts or calculate their stuff. So Joe basically picked the 50 and 200 because they were very easy to calculate on a circular slide rule so that his team could draw the hand-drawn charts that they drew, and they drew a lot of them. That was the beginning of the Smith-Barney chart room, actually, Alan Shaw and that. But the reason that they exist as moving averages is that they were easy to compute on a circular slide rule. Can anyone on the call tell me what a circular slide rule is? No. So they're not as relevant as they were because no one uses circular slide rules anymore. My father had one. It was actually really cool.
Fred?
Yes, sir.
Fred, I can tell you what a circular slide rule is.
We've got one. Jim, you've got one. Well, and do you mind? I'm going to ask a question here, which you don't have to answer, but how old are you, Jim?
88.
88. Okay. So we do have one guy who's a very, very kind client, by the way, that knows the answer to that, and he's 88 years old. So I'm not going to ask you to describe it. I don't think anyone here really is wildly interested. But when you get you're at home, when you get a chance, pull out your circular slide rule and calculate some 50 and 200-day moving averages for us.
Yeah, like I've got a lot of time for that.
Yeah, right.
Take care.
Go catch some fish, dude. That's where the 50 and 200 came from, so I tend to discount it. And Bob Farrell did some great work on that when he was at Merrill Lynch. Other questions? Very well. We'll say going once, going twice. Very well. This will end the Fred Report Technical Market Call for April 24th, 2025. Everybody have a lovely weekend.